morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue Tuesday, April 2nd. Because we have a number of people signed up to testify on a bill for a public hearing, I'm going to change the order of the agenda today, and we will start with the public hearing. If there is time remaining, we will then move to our informational meeting. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2184A.
LRO.
Thank you, Chair Nixon, members of the committee. This bill, House Bill 2184A, is in regards to the Oregon Universal Service Fund. This bill modifies the definitions that applicable for service surcharge, so it brings in wireless communication, retail commercial radio services, retail connected voice over IP or VoIP services to the universal surcharge. It changes the cap from 8.5% to 7% of applicable charges, and also establishes a broadband fund. And there is a dash six on top of the A, and that would give public libraries second preference to allocation of the broadband fund and move residential projects down to third priority when distributing the broadband fund.
Thank you. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pam Marsh. I'm the House Representative for District 5, which is Southern Jackson County. I want to start the introduction to HB 2184 with just a slice of telecommunications history. Contemporary telecommunications regulation traces its beginnings way back to the Communications Act of 1934, which essentially established the concept of universal service, the principle that all Americans should have access to communication services. That act described a nationwide regulated telecommunications network available to all people of the United States with adequate facilities at reasonable charges through the use of wire and radio communications. Carriers were required to serve anyone who asked. And in OLIS, you will find a reference to an FCC universal service document should you want to read up on telecommunications history. So that worked pretty well for decades until deregulation of telephone service began to threaten the provision of services to customers who cost more than others. In response, many states, including Oregon, established what's called carrier of last resort obligations, or COLR. These obligations require certain telecommunications companies to continue to serve all customers in their service territory, even those in the very most remote corners. Recognizing that the COLR obligation imposed costs that couldn't be recouped, in 1999, the Oregon legislature established the Universal Service Fund, which provides funding via a monthly surcharge on landlines to support local telephone companies that provide basic telephone service in high-cost rural areas of the state. Revenue from the Universal Fund supports the maintenance of infrastructure that is used to complete calls made from both landlines and cell phones, although cell phone users do not currently support the fund. Current revenues from the Universal Service Fund total approximately $28 million a year, generated through an 8.5% surcharge on all landlines and on a few voice over internet protocol providers, or VoIP providers, who voluntarily participate in the fund. The PUC sets the rate, manages the fund, and dispenses money in a structured regulatory framework. 2 years ago, this legislature approved use of the Universal Service Fund by carriers of last resort for broadband service where applicable. Today's bill, House Bill 2184, takes the next step to modernize the Universal Service Fund by making two changes. First, HB 2184 expands the Universal Service Fund to include cell phones and voice over internet protocol users in the Universal Fund surcharge. It will not surprise you to learn that landlines have declined precipitously over the last 20 years. However, the obligation to serve high-cost residents and the need to maintain the infrastructure that is used for all calls, cell or landline, has not changed. Expanding the mix of providers that contribute to the fund reflects consumer usage and is consistent with practice across the nation. 42 states provide universal service support. 30 include cell phone providers in their fund, and 28 include VoIP providers. Again, I would refer you to OLIS for a breakdown of the universal service funds as they exist across the nation. Data compiled by the Tax Foundation and also posted in OLIS indicates that Oregon is dead last among 50 states in taxes and fees imposed on cell phone providers. The surcharge on cell phones will be applied to just that portion of the bill that addresses intrastate voice calls. It will not apply to internet charges, texts, or interstate voice. The PUC will continue to regulate the Universal Service Fund in accordance to all stipulations and agreements now in place. The second significant change proposed in HB 2184 is creation of a broadband fund supported through revenues generated by the Universal Service Fund. Over the past 15 years, broadband has joined traditional voice service as essential communications technology really required for the 21st century. The FCC recognized this shift 20 years ago and has funded broadband services as part of its Universal Service Fund since the passage of the 1996 Telecommunications Act. Those of us who live on the I-5 corridor probably take our high-speed service for granted. But despite the ubiquitous nature of broadband in nearly every aspect of our lives, many of Oregon's rural communities still lack any kind of sufficient coverage. Others later today will speak specifically to the need. But as a general statement, I will share with you that approximately 400,000 Oregonians, 26 school districts, and 37% of our public libraries lack the FCC's current standards for residential service, which is 25 megabits per second download and 3 megabits per second upload. Broadband fund revenues will be distributed in the form of grants or loans to unserved or underserved areas of the state via rules determined by Business Oregon. The fund will be technology and provider neutral, supporting planning, technical assistance, or infrastructure projects that best fit the needs of individual communities. The fund will be capped at $10 million a year. Priority will go to broadband projects that get school districts and public libraries online. You may remember that in 2018, the legislature established the Connecting Oregon Schools Fund, which enables schools to get a 10% state match to acquire a 90% match from the FCC for broadband projects. The new broadband fund would be the source of revenue for that state portion of the match. And just this morning, by the way, I got a list of school districts that are ready in 2019 to apply for that FCC funding that will require the state match. The state match will range from $1 million to $2.5 million. So we have a number of school districts ready to go, but we've got to come up with our piece of the state match. With these changes, first, expansion of the base Universal Service Fund to include cell and VoIP service, and two, establishment of the broadband fund. Now let me turn to the revenue impact of HB 2184, since in fact this is the Revenue Committee. HB 2184 caps the traditional Universal Service Fund revenues at $30 million and the new broadband fund at $10 million. Generating maximum revenues of $40 million per year. The current Universal Service Fund generates approximately $28 million. So this represents an increase of up to $12 million a year. However, the addition of cell and VoIP users significantly broadens the Universal Service Fund base, enabling us to decrease the current surcharge. Accordingly, the bill caps the surcharge at 7%, down from the current maximum of 8.5%. And please note that that 7% surcharge is a cap, not a guarantee. The Universal Service Fund will continue to be regulated by the Public Utilities Commission. If revenue needs change in either the base fund or the broadband fund, the rate will be further decreased in the regulatory process. The PUC will monitor the fund and adjust the surcharge accordingly so that revenues do not exceed the goals. Revenues will accrue first to the base fund and then spill over to the broadband fund. Finally, I want to address the specific impact of HB 2184 on users. Based on maximum revenues raised at $40 million a year, analysis indicates that cell phone users will pay between $4 and $8 per year. landline users will see a decrease in bills since that maximum surcharge is going from 8.5% down to a maximum of 7%. This bill is the quintessential effort to spread a small cost across a wide base, ensuring that responsibilities are equitably shared by all user groups. So that concludes my summary of what the bill does. I am, of course, happy to take questions. I know we have a number of experts who have been working on this and who will speak to the needs for a broadband fund sitting behind me.
Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Marsh, for bringing this forward. I want to start by applauding you in working this bill in the sense that I see that the function has moved from a separate department into Business Oregon as far as the management portion of of this fund. And also setting up a fund, I believe, is a good thing. I guess my question is, if this is a priority for the legislature and a priority for Oregonians to fund rural broadband, in a biennium where we'll have record revenues, why would we tax Oregonians more and not just use general funds to seed this broadband fund?
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Rep. Reschke. I want to emphasize a couple of things. First of all, although the broadband fund has gotten a good deal of the attention in this bill, the bill is also about really stabilizing the existing Universal Service Fund, which provides some very fundamental voice services and maintains infrastructure for all calls, cell, and phone. The broadband fund is a part of the bill, but I want to emphasize that there are really two important missions in this bill. In terms of why establish a broadband fund via the Universal Service Fund, I think that, you know, we have been funding over the years broadband projects, but we've been doing it in a very opportunistic way. When we have a community that has a local champion and puts together a project and has a legislator who's listening, sometimes that community can get some money out of bond money to invest in a project within their community. But it is my sense that in order to really provide adequate service to the big chunk of Oregonians who currently don't have it, that we need a flow of funding that is consistent, that is predictable, that can be used for planning purposes, for technical assistance, and then for infrastructure. And that frankly may not be a long-term need, but right now we have a big chunk of rural Oregon that needs investment, and establishing a stable and predictable fund is part of our ability to address that. Now, why do it in this form rather than general fund? I remember a couple weeks ago when we had a co-chairs introduce the draft budget for the state, and part of the requirement for that was actually a 5% reductions across departments. So although our revenues may be high, our kicker obligations are still present, and the amount of fungible general revenue that's available, I think it's going to be extraordinarily limited. Plus, I think it's important that this fund exists in a predictable way over the next year, in the years to come. We have put a sunset in the bill of 10 years on the broadband fund portion of it. That'll be a good time to look at the technology and see if we've accomplished the mission. But I don't think this is a one-year mission. I think this is a multi-year mission.
Thank you, Representative Marsh. We have 12 people signed up to testify. I hope that you can limit your remarks to no more than 3 minutes each. That will allow time for questions if anyone on the committee has a question. I would like Brant Wolf and Samuel Pastrick to come up now.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. The OTA represents traditional landline facilities-based carriers in the state. We do not represent wireless carriers or cable companies. Thank you for the opportunity to be here to speak about this bill. It's a really important bill for us. We, the association, approached Representative Marsh about this some time ago, and she was gracious enough to introduce the bill and take an interest in it and help us out with it. She covered the bill really in a fine fashion, and I couldn't really add much to what she has to say, but I would like to just emphasize a couple of things. The main driver for us on this bill is there are two. There's our carrier of last resort obligations, which Representative Marsh referenced. We are regulated carriers, and we have assigned territories, and we have to provide service to everybody in that assigned territory who asks us. That's our obligation. We are happy to meet that obligation. The Universal Service Fund helps us meet that obligation. One thing to, I think, remember or recall from past testimony is that the wireless carriers use our networks to provide service to their customers using our services. The network that this fund supports. They do this without compensating us at all. When the fund began in 1999, carriers compensated one another with access charges. Those were judged to be implicit subsidies. In other words, you paid for those, they were embedded in a rate. You didn't know you were paying it. Policymakers determined that it would be better to have an explicit subsidy, a universal service fund surcharge on your bill that you could see and know what it was meant to do. Access charges transitioned away to zero to be replaced by this Universal Service Fund. In 1999, when the fund began, wireless carriers sought and were granted an exemption from paying into the fund. I think if we could go back to 1999 and undo that, nobody would grant that same exemption. The situation is completely different now. There are vastly more wireless handsets than there are landlines. We all know this. It's self-evident. The situation that we are left with, the wireless carriers are just off scot-free. This has always annoyed us and aggravated us. We have never thought that was appropriate. We've tried two other times to get the wireless carriers into the fund and met with no success whatsoever. This bill, if it's passed and signed into law, would affect that change. I think it's important to note also that this is not a windfall for carriers. This fund is carefully managed by the PUC. They do a great job at it. They're here in the room if you have any questions for them about how they go about their business, but we appreciate the work that they do. The high water mark of the fund was $47 million some years ago. As Representative Marsh indicated, it's down to about 27 now. This bill wouldn't even get us back to where we used to be. It would get us part of the way back to where we used to be, and we would still have to go to the Public Utility Commission of Oregon and make our case for the support that we get. And that's what it is. It's support. It's not a windfall or some pot of gold. It just helps us meet our obligations in a transparent way. In 2017, the OTA sought and had legislation passed and signed into law that allowed the fund to support broadband networks. Prior to that, it could only support a voice part of the network. As we all know, nobody deploys a voice-only network. The networks we deploy are modern, they're up to date, a lot of them are fiber-based, and they help schools, local economies, citizens, all those things engage in the world of 2019. That's an important thing that shouldn't be overlooked or forgotten. I think in order to just, you have my testimony. I don't want to take too much time, but I would refer you to this part of my testimony in OLIS. It's a little busy, but it demonstrates clearly how the wireless carriers use our networks for everything, for voice, for text, for data, all those things. They use our network. I know the wireless industry has indicated that they do compensate us in some fashion with an interconnection agreement. That can be true, but that is not always true. That's a highly competitive wholesale business, not a retail business. Our members don't always get that business. It can be one of our competitors. It could be a Comcast, an LS Networks. I could go on. There are dozens of, well, not dozens, but there are a lot of companies that go after that business and are successful. And we are left, again, with no compensation for the use of our networks. I think I'll end there. Thank you for the opportunity again. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Chair.
I forgot.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, Vice Chair Finley, members of the committee. For the record, Sam Pastrick with Oregon Citizens Utility Board. So CUB is a residential utility customer advocate. We represent both energy and telecommunication customers. Really, CUB supports this bill, 2184, with the dash six for three primary reasons. I will, before I highlight those reasons, I will say that I do have some pretty substantive testimony up on OLIS. I'm not going to read directly from that, but I would offer that it is up there to read at your leisure. So these three reasons that CUB supports 2184, they're pretty simple and they're pretty straightforward. The first is that there's a fundamental fairness issue at play here that both Representative Marsh and Brandt highlighted. And this fairness issue, you can distill it down to, we have all this network infrastructure out there, modern network infrastructure. Now that infrastructure and the maintenance of that infrastructure is only being paid for by standalone landline customers, the folks that we represent, and certain voice over IP customers. And in short, that to CUB is unfair. And the way to solve for this fundamental fairness issue is to bring both wireless companies and also remaining voice over IP companies and their customers into the fold by lowering that surcharge. Again, the surcharge today, which is only paid for by, again, standalone landline customers and some voice over IP customers, excuse me, is 8.5%. What this bill would do is lower that cap down to 7%. And as Representative Marsh made a point to highlight, that is a cap. And I believe OTA would agree with me that in all likelihood, we would not even reach that cap. That is a cap. We're not trying to make it 7% year over year over year. It's a cap. And were this bill to pass, PUC, the Public Utility Commission, would have greater information at their disposal, and they would be able to make a better determination about where that surcharge should fall in order to accommodate the existing high-cost program and the new broadband grants program. Now, the two other reasons CUB supports 2184 is really, and I just sort of mentioned this in my first point, that landline customers, standalone landline customers, many of whom live in rural parts of the state and economically challenged parts of the state, in large measure, these folks are older adults, lower income, they would see a reduction in the surcharge in their monthly bill, and that's important to us representing them. The third reason is that there is a stark digital inequality in the state of Oregon. I think we're all aware of this, and I think you're going to hear from other folks today who will speak more to this. I do want to quickly go over some numbers. I have 1 minute. Okay. Now, this is in my testimony online, but I do think these numbers are worth highlighting. Now, this first bit of information is from the most recent FCC broadband deployment report from 2018. Below 80% of the population in 15 Oregon counties has access to fixed broadband, broadband being 25 over 3. Below 90% of the population in 24 Oregon counties has access to fixed broadband. Below 17% of the population in 5 Oregon counties, Wheeler, Gilliam, Baker, Sherman, and Harney, has access to fixed broadband. There's some additional information from American Community Survey, which is done by the Census Bureau, though not every 10 years, done every year. I'm going to skip down to some aggregated 5-year average information. It's up right there. Because I think this really does highlight the rural-urban divide when it comes to digital inequality. So the lowest broadband subscription rates in the state of Oregon, Lake, Gilliam, Malheur, Baker, and Coos, 62.1, 67.1, 67.9, 70, and 70. The five most connected counties in the state of Oregon, Washington, Benton, Clackamas, Multnomah, and Deschutes, 87.9, 87.3, 85.4, 84.1, and 83.0. I think these numbers, frankly, speak for themselves in that there is a stark digital divide among rural counties and urban counties. Again, I would just encourage this committee's support for 2184. TUB thinks this is really fantastic public policy, and I'll leave my testimony there. I know I went a bit over, so I apologize, Representative Nathanson.
Thank you both. Questions? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And before Representative Smith Warner got here, I was the member of the committee. There was the chair and the two vice chairs and the member, so. Mr. Wolf, this is a question, not a political question. It's really a question of inquiry, just for my information. There's a federal USF and there's a state USF. How do those two interplay with one another?
Sure.
And how does your organization access both and use both, I guess, would be my next question.
Sure. Chair Nathanson, Representative Reschke, to the first part of the question, we have to back out that support, the federal support we get, before we can get any state support. And they're both geared towards the same thing, towards helping us meet our obligations. There are, I don't know that much about the federal fund, about how that works, how a company goes and gets that. But if it's anything like the state fund, where you have to demonstrate your costs and you get your support based on what you do, and how many people you're serving, I imagine it follows that same course of action. But it's not a windfall for us. All those other forms of support get backed out before we get any state support.
And then one more question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. So we'll be adding, this bill adds, I've heard the number like 4 million devices or something like that to the fund, which I don't know how many devices are currently in the fund, serving the fund. But I guess my question is, since we're broadening the base quite a bit, why are we only going from 8.5 to 7 as the cap? Why wouldn't we go from 8.5 to like 4.25 or cutting the cap in half? Why are we just lowering a little bit but broadening quite a bit?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Reschke, that's a really great question. And here is the answer.
Also really great.
Yeah, it'll be terrific. Logic would seem to indicate that we could cut the fund dramatically to at least 4%, 4.5%, and we really, really want to get there. We do. But the fact of the matter is this. This surcharge is only assessed on the voice part of a wireless bill, or a landline bill for that matter. As I understand the numbers, and it's called a safe harbor. This is a system that the feds have developed wherein you only apply the surcharge to that part of the bill you're supposed to apply it to. And that number is reducing, it's going down over the years. Not the number of landline or wireless carriers, but the amount of the voice product they deliver. Folks want data. Data can't be assessed a surcharge. Wireless carriers, as I understand it, are trying to driving their business towards accepting more data and less voice. There's probably a baseline somewhere, but we're not there yet. So to answer you directly, the reason we can't do a 4% surcharge is because the numbers don't add up to a 4% surcharge. The numbers that PUC have developed add up to a 7% surcharge. I still believe we can be lower than 7. I can tell you the PUC will not over-collect at all. They will collect up to the 40 million, if that's where we get to, and no more than that. I am confident of that. Our members have zero interest in a large surcharge, none whatsoever. We agreed to the cap in the first place, 8.5%, and we would agree to a lower surcharge if we had confidence in the numbers that we could get there. We absolutely will. And my commitment to you, sir, and to everybody in the room, actually, is if the numbers come in and it does amount to a 5% surcharge, we will come back and seek that cap in future sessions. We absolutely will.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Next, we'll hear from Ken Kestner, Patrick Singh, and Chris Tamarin. To move us along, Mr. Tamarin, I understand you have a letter you're going to read.
Yes.
Is the letter in the record?
I don't know.
Been submitted. I hope that when you speak, instead of reading the letter, you can just summarize the most important couple of points, and then we can read the letter.
Good morning to each and all. Thank you for letting me have the opportunity. If I seem a little sleepy, I stayed in a motel room last night and the pillow did not match me. I'd like to lend support to House Bill 1784 on the funding aspect for both cellular phone service and also for internet. on the cellular phone service. I was county commissioner for 12 years. And every 3 years I would call, we have a community called Plush, Oregon, that has no cell phone service and minimum internet, satellite only, basically.
And please forgive me for interrupting you. Did you say your name when you started speaking?
Oh, pardon. Ken Kessner.
Thank you so much.
Former Lake County Commissioner. I'm new at this, okay?
And I didn't catch it either.
Yeah. But getting cell phone service, if this bill would aid in that to communities, not just Lake County, but across eastern Oregon and other places, western Oregon. It's a health and safety issue, having a cell phone. I'll relate to one occasion about 18 years ago, a ranch lady lost her life due to an accident out in the field and laid in agony for hours until she passed. Cell phone service is essential for safety and health. EMS that responds out there does not have cell phone service. So any fashion that this can aid in cell phone coverage, that would be greatly appreciated. Now, on the internet aspect, I've been a big supporter of internet for health, education, and basically the kids. People of my vintage, we can use the internet to a point, but for our young kids to be successful in the future, they need it today because they are our next generation of future community leaders. So I'm a strong supporter for the grant aspect. Small rural counties do not have the resource staff or the funding always to pursue internet service to our communities. As 12 years of commissioner, I had more than a workload of regular stuff, and I pursued broadband internet mostly as a night job until it became part of my day job also. But we don't have the staff to address great big grants. If this bill can aid in technical assistance, and an example of financial assistance, we had an E-rate grant from Lakeview out to Plush Adel, and the match to the two small school districts would have basically wiped out their reserves. So any assistance that this bill or the technical assistance and matching would be greatly appreciated in that fashion too.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Singh. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. We represent 36 diverse counties in the state. And I think that diversity is showcased today by the two former county commissioners in the room who are on two different sides of the bill. However, our association is united in its support for 2184. In fact, our vote through our legislative committee a few months ago, where all 36 counties were represented, was unanimous. One of our association top priorities is to continue to support policies such as 2184 that bridge the digital divide in our state, establishing a broadband fund that will increase access to reliable high-speed internet in Oregon is an important issue for our counties in terms of economic development, healthcare, and public safety. Many rural counties, as you know, still have limited access to high-speed internet, and so we support a stable funding source to support these goals. Increased access to broadband is important for health, safety, and economic prosperity to our citizens, and we appreciate the leadership of Representative Marsh for sponsoring this bill. Also important is that the bill creates an equal playing field up between the different phone technologies in an industry that has significantly changed over time. We look forward to continuing to work with all of you on this bill and our common goal of increasing access to broadband around the state. Thank you very much.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Marsh and Finley, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Christopher Tamron. I'm with the Oregon Business Development Department, and I'm here today in my capacity as staff to the Oregon Broadband Advisory Council to provide the testimony of Chair Joseph Fresnel, who was unable to be here traveling from Hermiston this morning. At your request, I'll paraphrase portions of this. So for the record, my name is Joseph Fresnel, Chair of the Oregon Broadband Advisory Council, in which I serve representing rural Oregon. I am also the General Manager and Chief Executive Officer of Eastern Oregon Telecom, a rural competitive telephone company and internet service provider. I appreciate the opportunity to submit the testimony to you in writing. I personally submit House Bill 2184, and I'm pleased to also communicate the support of the Oregon Broadband Advisory Council. While Oregon has done a remarkable job of increasing broadband availability, we still have large portions of our state that are underserved by any measure. On November 1st, 2018, Broadband in Oregon, a report of the Oregon Broadband Advisory Council was submitted to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, and individually to all the members of the Legislative Assembly for the 80th Legislative Assembly. And is posted on the council website at broadband-oregon.org. I invite you to read that report and specifically the executive summary and the recommendation portions. One of the key challenges addressed in the report is digital inclusion, referring to the activities necessary to ensure that all individuals and communities, including the most disadvantaged, have access to and use of information and communications technologies needed for full participation in our society, our democracy, and economy. A rising tide lifts all ships. If we are to realize our potential as a state, we must ensure that all citizens can access reliable and affordable broadband. Today, much of Oregon still is reporting download speeds of less than standard, the broadband standard, which means that many Oregonians cannot easily participate in the global economy, receive the same level of education as urban dwellers, have access to the benefits of telehealth and telemedicine, and leverage all the tools that e-government provides. This is a stark picture of the digital divide that continues in our state. This bill, House Bill 2184, fairly and equitably creates a funding mechanism to help solve the digital divide in Oregon, giving every Oregonian the opportunity to leverage the benefits of a reliable, fast, and affordable connection to the internet, and that makes Oregon stronger. Respectfully, Joseph Fresnel. Thank you.
Questions for this panel? Representative Roeschke.
Thank you. Just a quick comment. I wanted to thank former Commissioner Kestner for traveling over 300 miles one way to come testify. I know he's been passionate about this issue for quite some time. And also to Mr. Singh, I appreciate the way you wear a blue sports coat and suit and a striped tie that has yellow stripes in it. So thank you.
No. Some of the rest of us are wearing blue also.
Well, yeah.
A little bit of blue here.
Representative Marsh.
I just want to thank you, Chair. I want to chime in on thanking Mr. Kestner, who's made, this is his second trip up from Lakeview to testify on this bill. It's a long way to come and involves an overnight, and very grateful for you to be here. Thank you.
Thank you all. Next, we'll hear from Tootie Smith, Emily Smith, and John Kamelik.
Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Tootie Smith, representing Taxpayers Association of Oregon and a retired county commissioner. We opposed the 7% cell phone tax because it's a tax, and our position is taxes are inherently unfair to the most vulnerable people in Oregon. Secondly, the cell phone tax, who is being pushed by industry, we've heard all the reasons why for that today. And somehow the thinking is that while cell phone taxes are inherently low in Oregon, we need to make up for that gap by raising them. Oregon is the fifth highest tax state already, and why should we raise a low product tax product. We are already 10th highest in the entire United States for spending on a per capita basis. And I am struck by this 7% cell phone tax because, as you know, and I hope you know, in the Senate, there's Senate Bill 300, which is an 8% tax. And I would certainly hope these House members are talking to the Senate members. Are we going to have an 8% tax in the Senate and then a 7% tax over here, and that's 15%. I've also been brought to my attention, currently in the state of Oregon, our cities understand, gee, our cell phone taxes are low in this state. We can raise them, too, to get money for whatever we need. Milwaukee has raised their cell phone tax 7%. So let's do a little quick math. We have 7% tax Milwaukee. We add a 7% tax from this bill, that's 14%. And then, gee, the Senate has their own thing they want to do over there, an 8% tax. We're at 22% taxes raised just on the cell phones, because I think maybe we think there's this huge, huge need out there. And I can understand the county commissioner. I'm a county commissioner, I'm a former county commissioner from Clackamas County. And you notice on the graph that Clackamas County is at 85%. The reason why we're at 85%, because when I was a commissioner, we got a federal grant for $7.8 million. And we built a cell phone ring around our entire county. And maybe some of you don't know, but Clackamas County is 1 million acres. And we have huge recreation facilities like Mount Hood Timberline Lodge and all the skiing facilities that the city folk like to come out to us to enjoy. It was essential that we have internet and that we have emergency services. Then we realized after that, gee, there was a gap in our emergency services. So as county commissioners, we put out a referral to the voters and asked them, do you want to pay for enhanced cell phone services for emergency providers? And they said yes, and with that money, we built additional cell phone towers to provide emergency services so our ambulance and fire and police could reach these vulnerable areas. But we asked the voters if that's what we wanted. We made the case to the voters that this is what's happening in our county, and if you want to support it, yes. And if you don't want to support it, then we won't raise your taxes. And just coming from the Taxpayers Association of Oregon, we've been monitoring tax bills in this legislature, and I'm heartened, and I'm totally disheartened as a fourth-generation farmer and Oregonian and former member of this legislative body, that there are 35 different tax bills that you folks are considering. And I have a daily blog, and I can't even keep up on writing about all of those. And I'm not even taking a position. I'm just saying, folks, this is coming down, and this is coming down. When will it end? Thank you very much.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, and Vice Chair Finley, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Emily Smith, and today I'm here representing the Oregon Small Business Association in opposition to House Bill 2184. The Oregon Small Business Association is opposed to legislation that makes it harder for Oregon small businesses to grow and thrive. Over the last several years, the cost of doing business in Oregon has continued to skyrocket, and small business owners are having a hard time keeping up. House Bill 2184 continues to derive up the cost of doing business in the state by imposing a cell phone tax to fund broadband internet. The Oregon Small Business Association is opposed to raising taxes on products or businesses to fund something unrelated. If the state wishes to build broadband networks, we believe they should use lottery dollars through the Economic Development Department. A recent article in the Statesman Journal noted that the projected net general funds plus lottery funds are up $147 million over the last revenue forecast. If these funds are carried over as expected, the state will have $67.7 million more to work with and in the 2019 to 2021 biennium. We believe a broadband fund is best created from these dollars rather than creating a new tax on cell phones to fund an unrelated service. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. The Oregon Small Business Association urges a no vote on House Bill 2184. Thank you.
Chairman Nathanson, committee members, on behalf of Verizon, I, John Schmalak, urge you to oppose HB 2184A for several reasons. First, while it's a worthwhile goal to bring broadband to unserved areas of Oregon, and it's certainly important, very important to some people, it does not make tax policy sense to impose a new 7% tax on wireless intrastate voice service to subsidize a competing service, which is rural landline. Instead, this idea should be funded from the Oregon General Fund because all Oregonians receive the benefit of additional broadband service users. And we just think that the funding mechanism in this bill, it should not be wireless subscribers. In our view, it should come from the general fund. Also, as Representative Marsh mentioned, there was a 5-year OUSF stipulation that the PUC supervised between the telecom carriers. It's only, that happened 2 years ago. An agreement was reached, and now certain parties to that agreement are now seeking to change the rules via supporting this bill. We believe that the PUC has jurisdiction, a deal's a deal, and just because some companies now see a pot of gold and they want to change the rules, and we don't think that's appropriate. Let's let the PUC continue to do their job. They're supposed to review the agreement this year in 2019, and I would urge the committee to let them do their job. Third, the FUSF has $9 billion in its fund for rural broadband development and deployment. Oregon's population is 1.3% of the nation's population. So doing the math, that would mean if Oregon got its fair share, there'd be $100 million available to be allocated to Oregon broadband. I think that's where the money should come from, and not a new charge on wireless customers to fund it that receive no benefit from this. Also, I believe Representative March mentioned that the new proposed charge would amount to $4 to $8 per year. We believe that number is understated. It would be about $10.80 per customer per year. And where we get that is about $13 of the wireless bill would be assessable. And when you multiply $13 by this proposed 7% rate, you get 90 cents. 90 cents times 12 months is $10.80. So that's how we get our numbers. Also, I believe Ms. Smith forgot to mention another bill that's being considered, HB 2449, that seeks to double the state's 911 fee from 75 cents to $1.50. That's also on the table, and that was one that she forgot to mention. Also, there was a comment about wireless not paying their fair share. And that only gave really half of the picture. While it is true that wireless doesn't pay to connect calls to a rural landline, the reverse is also true, that when a landline customer calls wireless and wireless connects that call, the landline company doesn't pay for that either. So there's a reciprocity position going on here. Lastly, the proposal on the table is regressive. And what I mean by that is it places a significantly higher burden on the poorest Oregonians. Federal government studies show that 68% of poor adults have cut the cord, and they rely solely on wireless. Add to that the fact that poor folks tend to purchase plans with a higher proportion of voice service, which is what the OUSF charge applies to. On the other hand, wealthier wireless customers buy all-you-can-eat, unlimited data and internet plans, And they will pay OUSF on a lesser proportion of their total charges. So this proposed fee falls disproportionately hard on wireless customers of modest means. And it's been Oregon's position not to tax the poorest of the poor. That's why the state doesn't impose a sales tax. It is true that right now that Oregon has the least taxes on wireless, but they probably also have the least taxes on a lot of things like shoes and so forth because there's no sales tax. That's been the policy position, and this bill runs anathema to that by hitting the poorest Oregonians the hardest. And I stand for questions.
Thank you. We have four more people to testify. Just Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for indulging me. I have two quick questions for two of you. First, for Ms. Smith, the first Ms. Smith. The bill in the Senate that you referred to, SB 300, have you had a chance to read that bill?
I have.
And it would do the same thing that this bill does. So those are not duplicative efforts. They are different approaches to the same thing.
You possibly know that since there's been no announcement to that effect. And that's why I think many of these things are confusing.
I'm glad to have the opportunity to clarify that. And then for Mr. Chmielik, I'm sorry if I butchered your name. I'm trying to get better at it as these hearings go on. Have you had a chance to look at the bill, the language around the maintenance of the stipulation with the PUC? And so it is clear in the bill then that all agreements and all regulatory processes in the PUC are maintained.
Representative Marsh, except the part where the wireless carriers can opt out. This bill would not let the wireless carriers continue to opt out of OUSF funding.
True, but in terms of the support given to small telecommunications companies, all of those agreements are maintained under this bill. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all. Thank you. Next, we will hear from Jim McCauley, Mary Beth Henry, Trey Hendricks. We have about 15 or 16 minutes left. My intent is to get through everyone who has signed up. Fawn Berry will be the last to speak. And Mr. Alanak, we will have to find a time to reschedule the informational meeting.
Start from the right.
Sure.
Okay. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Jim McCauley, representing League of Oregon Cities. I'll try to keep our comments really short. Our league is in support of this bill. I mean, this is part of our six top priorities that our league came up with in advance of the session. Broadband, from our perspective, is a critical link for economic development, for schools, for just simply connectivity to the world. And with a gap of 400,000 people, 26 school districts across the state, we can do better. The funding that's identified within this bill, it really comes down to, I think, a fairness issue with landlines paying into this system since its inception in 1999, and wireless not being part of that fund, yet still benefiting from the infrastructure that's been built in to the overall telecommunications network in this state. So the infrastructure piece for us is critically important as well. This is the electricity of the future. And I think there needs to be recognition of that and recognition of how you basically have to deal with that financing, very similar to how we deal with other infrastructure, whether it's electricity or whether it's sewer, water, or transportation. It essentially is built off of a fee or service structure like that. So those who benefit from the system or benefit from that infrastructure need to be part of that financing themselves. And I think when you look at what's built into this in terms of focusing in on a cap, there is recognition that it's not going to just allow PUC to increase that over time. They're focused in on a physical number, which I think is critical. So there will be an opportunity in all likelihood that per 7% is going to come down over time. I think for myself, I'll say personally as a consumer, I look back at my cell phone bills over the last couple of 3 years. And when you look at how much is physically in ours, I have four lines in the system. I pay about $245 a month. That only gets me 4 gigs. which I have to boost up because I got two kids in this that don't seem to know how Wi-Fi works and will utilize data more than they should. So I end up having to add a few extra dollars in each month basically to try to cover that. But the key point on that $245 or whether it's a $275 a month is the tax component or the fee component of that is roughly $10. It's been $10, $11 for the last 3 years. I think the additive pieces that are going to be coming from this OUS addition, or even if you want to look at House Bill 2449 in terms of 911, you're talking about some of those essential services, something that's critically important for this future of how, again, telecommunications goes forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Nicholson, Vice Chair Marsh, Vice Chair Finley, members of the committee. My name is Trey Hendricks, and I represent CenturyLink. Appreciate the opportunity to speak today. CenturyLink serves all over the state. We are a provider in some of the most densely populated areas of the state, Portland, Salem, Eugene, as well as in some of the most rural parts of the state, including Lake County and out near John Day and pretty much anywhere imaginable. So we very well understand the issues that are faced by rural Oregonians. Originally had some planned comments. I've thrown those away, having the opportunity to speak last and hopefully can address some of the comments that were made earlier. The first thing I'd like to say is that and I think that this was probably pretty effectively addressed, but CenturyLink has no intention of pursuing two separate universal service fund surcharges between the House and the Senate. We fully anticipate that if any bill passes, certainly it would only be one of those bills that would become law. The other point is that this is not a 7% surcharge. That is flatly wrong. This is a capped surcharge, as was mentioned earlier. The surcharge is managed by the Public Utility Commission, has been managed for some time, and currently there is an 8.5% cap, but historically, the fund, particularly when landline providers had many more customers, was much, the surcharge was much lower. And we fully anticipate that with additional source of revenue, that that surcharge will go down for all customers. The PUC settlement that was referenced earlier also will not change. That settlement will conclude and finish in the next few years here. It does not, this bill would not change the terms of that settlement. Another point is that there's been quite a bit of discussion about access charges and about who is responsible for paying for traffic terminated to customers. And that, essentially how access charges work, or used to work, is that a carrier would pay the carrier that terminates the call. So if a call were originated by a wireless customer and it went to a landline customer, that landline provider would pay a charge, would be paid, compensated for terminating that call to the landline customer. As it stands today, and we've looked at these numbers, about 75% of the traffic that's exchanged between cell phone and landline customers is terminated on the wireline customer's network. So there's a disproportionate amount of traffic being terminated by the wireline customers. And the cell phone companies are not compensating the wireline companies for terminating that traffic. So it's an inequitable arrangement right now because of the elimination of access charges. Another thing that's important to consider is why are wireless companies and customers not paying the surcharge today? And when the Universal Service Fund was first implemented almost two decades ago now, wireless was an emerging technology. there were very few wireless customers, certainly much fewer than the 4+ million handsets that we see in the state today. And one can only assume that the reason that this surcharge was not imposed upon the wireless industry at that time was that the state wanted to ensure that competition flourished, that there was no impediment to the development of wireless as a technology for voice communications. And that made sense then. I would certainly concur that at the time, it was critical, and it was shortly after the passage of the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which was intended to increase competition, that was the goal that policymakers wanted to achieve at that time. Well, that's no longer the case, because cell phone customers are now the vast majority of the customers of voice service. And again, this surcharge applies only to local voice service. It does not apply to internet or to long-distance service. So it's a fairly limited revenue that is going to be surcharged.
Can you wrap it up in about 1 minute? We have two more speakers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the last point I think I would make is that there's been some suggestion that this may be a better place for the surcharge or for this revenue source would be out of the general fund. And I'll first admit that I'm not a tax expert, but just at, you know, thinking from a practical perspective, I would say that the general fund comes out of taxpayer pockets anyway. So why not make this a surcharge that makes sense, that compensates the carriers in a way that it should for the services that they provide, and that is limited based on the commission's calculation of what is required in order to achieve the policy objective, something which they are an expert in and have done for decades now. Mm-hmm. And with that, I conclude my comments. Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, vice chairs, and committee members, for the record, my name is Mary Beth Henry, and in a former life, I served many years on the Oregon Broadband Advisory Council representing communities across Oregon. Broadband infrastructure is today's platform upon which we have come to depend in our daily lives. Digital skills underpin nearly every aspect of work and life, from filling out a job application to doing homework to checking on healthcare to paying a bill to communicating at work. It's really difficult to find a life task that does not require some level of broadband connectivity and digital literacy. Yet, approximately 1 in 5 Oregonians doesn't have internet access at home. Digital equity should be our goal. Digital equity ensures that all individuals and communities have the information technology capacity needed for full participation in our economy and our society. Why does digital equity matter? Well, it matters because it's foundational. Some of the other speakers spoke about broadband availability in Oregon. The thing is, we all know that what's really important, the point of connectivity, is what you do with it. But first, you have to have it. And there are counties in Oregon where approximately 50% of the population do not have access to broadband. It's essential, yet according to Pew Research, rural Americans are more than twice as likely as those who live in urban or suburban areas to never use the internet. I maintain that broadband is a rural-urban shared imperative. Imperative means urgent. We have Oregonians who couldn't get broadband access if they wanted to because it doesn't exist where they live. We need to work together, rural and urban, to ensure that all Oregonians have access and the skills needed to be more employable, productive, creative, healthy, and successful. Do we really want to see the dumbing down of the next generation of Oregonians for lack of connectivity? Data suggests that if a rural area has widely available and adopted broadband, it can start to successfully retain and attract millennials. Don't we want our young people to be able to choose to live in the communities where they grew up and have livable wage jobs? Final thoughts. The internet really is the new essential utility, yet many Oregonians don't have broadband access. And the digital divide is a critical economic challenge for both rural and urban areas. I urge this committee and the legislature to modernize the Oregon Universal Service Fund to support broadband grants for un- and underserved areas so that all of Oregon has the opportunity to prosper in the digital age. Thank you.
Representative Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Mr. Hendricks. You made a statement concerning the a prior deal within the PUC concerning broadband or wireless and line services, that a deal is still a deal in reference to something that had been done, and this measure does not negate or change that prior deal?
Yeah, that's correct. It was a settlement. Wireless was not included in this particular proceeding because they don't pay into the fund. So it is a settlement only between the landline companies and the traditional landline companies and some of the VoIP providers, largely cable providers. And it was a six-year settlement that slowly saw a reduction in the size of the fund. That settlement will remain in place and will reach its natural conclusion. If this bill is passed, any change to the Universal Service Fund, including the surcharge, would not occur until the settlement at the OPUC that we're talking about expired.
We have one final speaker, Fawn Berry.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Fawn Berry, representing the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association. OCTA has been actively engaged in this issue with the OTA since December. Our goal has been to try to craft legislation that will both broaden the contribution base and give certainty to our members about the amount that they will be paying into the Oregon Universal Services Fund. OCTA is in a unique position on this issue because we have providers of VoIP services who currently pay into the fund, and we have providers who are not subject to the fund. The surcharge is currently 8.5%. The main goal of our providers is to see that surcharge go down. OCTA wants to ensure that if this legislation broadens the base, that it also limits the overall size of the fund and decreases that surcharge. We have also been engaged with Representative Marsh as she's worked to create a new broadband grant fund. We agree that broadband is an important service that all Oregonians should be able to access. Our goal is to ensure those funds will be focused on the truly unserved areas of our state. We do not believe that state money should be used to compete against our members and the private investments that have been made. And we greatly appreciate it, Representative Marsh's willingness to engage with us on these issues. Unfortunately, we're not able to support House Bill 2184 with a 7% surcharge cap. The proponent's goal is to reach a $40 million fund for the OUSF and broadband program, but it's important to note that they will not need to raise that $40 million until 2022 because of the stipulation that has been referenced today. OCTA recently commissioned a study to look at FCC data to determine whether or not the surcharge cap of 7% proposed in 2184 could be lowered and still achieve the $40 million figure that proponents want to reach. While our analysis is complete, our consultants were not able to be here today, and we would like to have the opportunity at some point to have them present in front of this committee and to have discussions with the Legislative Revenue Office. We have given the results of our analysis to both the Oregon Telecommunications Association and to the PUC and look forward to continuing those discussions. Again, our goal is to reach agreement and to come back to this committee with a bill that we can support, recognizing that that support is tied to a decrease in the overall surcharge cap. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. For Legislative Revenue Office, I would appreciate it if you would be prepared to review and analyze the materials that are provided by the speaker or the organization, and then present the information to the committee.
And Chair Nathanson, we're happy to share those materials with you whenever.
Thank you. I would also like to see an updated revenue impact statement reflective of all these numbers.
Good. Any other questions? Thank you. I'm closing this public hearing on House Bill 2184A.
If you were here for the informational
meeting, I'm sorry that you missed this discussion of tax expenditure implicit sunsets, but we do intend to have that discussion at a later date. No other business, we're adjourned.